You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh yeah. Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Grab your pants.
Good morning and welcome to 3CR Breakfast on 3CR Community Radio. Today is Tuesday, the 22nd of July, 2025. And thank you to the radioactive show that played just before, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung and in the studio with me this morning is Juliette. Good morning, Juliette.
Good morning. Also, the listeners don't know, but we actually have a new Fung. We've got a blonde one today. I was taken by surprise.
Yes.
So I walked in here.
I guess listeners wouldn't know, but yes, I have changed my hair from a dark brown black with orange tips to blonde.
Yeah.
So just FYI, so that our listeners can really visualize what's happening in the studio.
Exactly.
You can imagine Juliette's shock when I walked in to the studio. How was your weekend, Juliette? Did you get up to anything
interesting?
Yeah,
I had a good weekend. I was actually doing some training for 3CR, so I got to meet a lot of programmers from some other shows.
Yeah.
I think both of us had quite a lot of crossover with Salaam Music Radio this weekend.
Yeah, so I was just telling Juliette that I went to see Marushti from Salaam Radio play with I was there with Inez from Thursday Breakfast, so shout out to Inez and shout out to Marushti. But yeah, it's always so nice crossing paths with other 3CR programmers. You know, for listeners who aren't aware, like when we do breakfast radio, you're pretty much alone because not many people are here yet. It's quite early, so it's nice to have those opportunities to meet other programmers and see what they're up to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, it's just so cool to meet people who are also passionate about their shows and have their own, you know, particular interests. And, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, like you just go on the website and just scroll through all the different programs and there are just so many.
Yeah.
Covering so many different topics, which is really cool. How about that for a 3CR plug?
I know.
That was good.
Wasn't planned at all.
No. Okay, well, we've got a pretty big show on today, so let's have a chat about that. We're starting today's program by playing one of the speeches from the rally to sanction Israel Now that took place in Canberra on Sunday. So we'll be hearing from Jeanette Parker, who is from Jews for Palestine WA. So that's coming up first. At 7:30, we'll be playing an interview that I had with Auntie Sue Hasseldine, who is a Gugudha elder, who is protecting her country from militarization and continuing colonization. So we'll be playing that interview for you. Auntie Sue and I spoke about the threats to her country from big companies such as Thales and Southern Launch and the work that she and her community are doing to protect the rock holes and the country and animals there.
And then at 7:45, we're going to be speaking to Mercedes Zanka from Renegades Activists. And Mercedes will be calling us from Canberra and is participating in the convergence as well, and is going to chat to us about how that's going and also about the complicity of Australia in supplying weapons to Israel. Then at 8 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Menahar Kandasamy, who's an activist from Sri Lanka and member of the Ceylon Workers Red Flag Union, and we're going to talk about issues faced by workers on tea plantations in Sri Lanka. And then finally at 8:15, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Kate Wiley, who is Executive Director of Doctors for the Environment Australia, about their recent court case against NOPSEMA and Woodside.
So a massive show. Make sure you are tuned in to 3CR Breakfast. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and on 3cr.org.au. And these are the news headlines for today, Tuesday the 22nd of July 2025. After yesterday's successful picket at the public housing towers in North Melbourne, another picket has been called for 7:30 a.m. this morning to stop pre-demolition work. There is also a second picket also being organised this morning for 7:30 at the North Richmond Towers. So you can find more information, including meeting points, by going on Instagram, and you can go to the accounts of Gabrielle DeVietri, Rahu Union Victoria, or the Save Public Housing Collective. And at 10 a.m. in Richmond today, public housing tenants and advocates will address a public hearing for the parliamentary inquiry into the redevelopment of Melbourne's public housing towers. The Victorian Government's controversial 2023 decision to demolish and redevelop 44 high-rise public housing buildings in Melbourne has already been the subject of a class action lawsuit and extensive media coverage. Victoria is currently in last place for social housing provision in Australia, with social housing making up only 2.9% of households in 2024, compared to the national average of 3.9%. Blueprints released for the Flemington and North Melbourne redevelopments reveal that the government plans to provide zero public housing in the new builds. The hearing will be open to the public and broadcast live on the committee's website, and it will take place from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the North Richmond Community Health at 23 Lennox Street. Also in the news, Saturday the 19th of July marked 12 years since former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd announced no person seeking asylum by sea would be allowed to settle in Australia. Since the announcement, thousands of people have been forcibly sent to detention camps in Nauru and Papua New Guinea, suffering violent attacks, medical neglect, and widespread discrimination. There are now over 100 people trapped in Nauru under offshore processing arrangements and 37 people abandoned by the Australian government in PNG. Around 900 more who were transferred to so-called Australia after suffering years in offshore detention remain on precarious temporary visas, denied the ability to live in safety and dignity. Earlier this year, the Albanese government attempted to use its new deportation powers to permanently exile three refugees living in Australia to Nauru for the rest of their lives. Fatima, a mother who survived detention in Nauru with her young family, said, "We've spent 12 years living in uncertainty from Christmas Island to Nauru to detention in Australia. My family and I still bear the scars of our time in offshore detention. It hasn't been easy, but we've built a life here with love and hope. Australia is our home. All we want is to belong and to be treated fairly. Permanent residency is a right, not a favour."
In other news this week, Israeli forces continue to pound Gaza a day after killing at least 115 Palestinians, including 79 aid seekers at the Zikim crossing and 13 others at GHF-run sites. Gaza's health ministry announces 19 deaths from starvation in the last 24 hours, as the UN warns that the hunger crisis in the Palestinian enclave has reached a new level of desperation. Israel has been blocking aid since March 2nd, and the UN and humanitarian aid agencies have long denounced the GHF for its weaponization of aid in Gaza and called on Israel to allow the entry of other humanitarian assistance, which has been blocked from entering the enclave. Philippe Lazzarini, the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, the UNRWA, said that staff in Gaza are sending desperate messages about the lack of food. "All man-made in total impunity. Food is available only a few kilometres away," he wrote on X, adding that the UN RWA has enough supplies at the border to feed Gaza for 3 months. And finally, in the headlines, research released on Monday cites a 280% spike in global cocoa prices in April 2024 following a heat wave in Ghana and the Ivory Coast, and a 300% jump in lettuce prices in Australia after floods in 2022. In the vast majority of cases, the increase in prices came soon after heat waves, including a 70% increase in cabbage prices in South Korea in September 2024, a 48% increase in rice prices in Japan in September 2024, and an 81% increase in potato prices in India in early 2024. Other price increases were linked to drought, such as a 2023 drought in Brazil that preceded a 55% increase in global coffee prices the following year, and a 2022 drought in Ethiopia that came before overall food prices increased by 40% in 2023. The research, published by six European research organisations along with the European Central Bank, was released before the United Nations Food Systems Summit, which will be co-hosted by Ethiopia and Italy in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, from July 27th to July 29th. Until we get to net zero emissions, extreme weather will only get worse, but it's already damaging crops and pushing up the price of food all over the year. All over the world. The report's lead author, Maximilian Kotz from the Barcelona Supercomputing Centre, said in a press release. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 22nd of July, 2025, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
Do you want to come and take a look inside 3CR? Curious to see our studios and where your favourite radio program is produced? On Friday the 25th and Saturday 26th of July, 3CR is running tours as part of Melbourne Open House 2025. The 45-minute tours will take you right through the station and into the studios, as well as provide history and details of our current programming and projects. Come take a look. To register, head to openhousemelbourne.org and search for 3CR. Melbourne Open House at 3CR, Friday the 25th and Saturday 26th of July. See you then.
Hi, my name is Miss Kanina. I'm a proud Yoda, Jaja Rong, Kalkadoon, and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
This is Tuesday Breakfast on 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, and 3cr.org.au. We are starting today's program by bringing you one of the speeches from the rally to sanction Israel now that took place in Canberra on Sunday. We're going to hear from Jeanette Parker from Jews for Palestine, WA, who speaks about the ongoing dehumanisation of Palestinians, the responsibility of Western governments and their complicity in the facilitation of genocide, as well as the silencing of dissent through the new report by Gillian Siegel in so-called Australia.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Jeanette Parker, who is a member of Jews for Palestine in Western Australia.
First, I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the land on which we meet. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. And I want to acknowledge the links between the occupation and colonisation of Aboriginal land and the occupation and genocide of the Indigenous peoples of the lands of Palestine. Both peoples have experienced mass cultural erasure, land theft and colonisation, and the genocide continues. The two struggles are written in blood and great injustice. So today we come together from around the country in rage and in grief, both as witnesses and fierce and unstinting opponents to 22 months of deliberate mass murder. While we can name other genocides that have occurred since the Nazis' extermination of Jews, what is different here, I think, and so as others have observed today, is that we are seeing it on our screens every minute of every day. Seeing what Francesca Albanese described recently as one of the cruelest genocides in modern history. Jews for Palestine, Western Australia, recognise what is happening in Palestine today as the Holocaust of our time. Israel's final solution to erase the Palestinian people once and for all. We know the role that our government and other Western governments have played in enabling and actively facilitating this Holocaust. And of course, we have understood that our job is that of making demands on our own government, in particular, to sanction Israel, to condemn the actions of the Israeli state at every level. And our protests have been significant. Many have observed that 22 months in, the protests to sanction Israel and free Palestine are probably the most sustained we have seen since the Vietnam War. But our government, like those other governments supporting Israel at all costs, have ignored, obfuscated, and lied about their complicity. Furthermore, in a cynical attempt to deflect attention from their complicity in genocide, they have tried to smear those who support international law, human rights, and dignity as anti-Semitic. This, of course, has deep roots in the grotesque and morally bankrupt project of deflecting Western guilt about European anti-Semitism, about genocide in Europe, onto the Palestinians, even though they bear no responsibility for it. All in order to create a state whose purpose is to project Western and in particular US power in the Middle East. Jews of conscience around the world completely reject this exploitation of human suffering to justify yet more suffering. The governments of the US, Germany, and the UK, unsurprisingly, three significant contributors to Israel's genocide, have launched the most savage attacks on pro-Palestine protest. We've seen people kidnapped, bashed, imprisoned, and deported. We've seen Palestine action banned, as people have said, under the UK Terrorism Act, with those continuing to express their support risking jail sentences of up to 14 years. And you know what I find most bizarre? In Germany, one third of those arrested or deplatformed for anti-Semitic speech are themselves Jewish. That's right, Germany is specifically targeting Jewish supporters of Palestinian human rights, all in the name of combating anti-Semitism. This is dystopian madness. Anti-Zionist Jews have a special message for Germany. You don't atone for one genocide by supporting another one. In this country, we've seen special police operations formed and protest laws created to monitor and investigate anti-Semitic acts. We've seen students disciplined. We've seen journalists sacked. We've seen politicians driven out of the Labour Party. While I don't want to make this about us, because our focus must absolutely be on the horror being faced by the people of Gaza and the West Bank, we know that the global campaign for peace and justice in Palestine is crucial. Just as it was crucial in ending the war in Vietnam, in bringing down apartheid in South Africa, and in freeing East Timor from Indonesian occupation. But right now, we are seeing the most dangerous, the most authoritarian attempt to silence us yet. Straight from Trump's playbook, we have Gillian Siegel's report to government that seeks to destroy... Ooh! Shame! Straight from Trump's playbook, we have Gillian Siegel's report to government that seeks to destroy our solidarity movement in every sphere. It would withdraw the funding of arts bodies and universities that don't comply with the IHRA definition. It would monitor, shape, and govern media narratives and school curriculums, give police ever more special powers in responding to newly defined anti-Semitic acts, regulate social media, and dictate immigration laws. The result would be censorship and surveillance of public institutions and the repression of expressions of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Of course, this has been coming for some time. And we have a classic example from Western Australia. You may have heard it. Students at the University of WA have been instructed that even if something constitutes an objective truth, it must not be spoken if it causes fear or discomfort to others. We are told that criticism of the Israeli state makes Jewish people feel uncomfortable and unsafe. Well, as Randa Abdel Fattah from Macquarie University has asked, since when do the victims of genocide have the responsibility to defer to and protect the feelings of those who enact, support and enable their genocide? It's not Jews that feel threatened by the Palestinian solidarity movement, but genocide supporters. Anti-Zionist Jews are committed to rescuing Jewish identity from fascist sociopaths like Netanyahu, who want to drag us to the gates of hell. Siegel's report insists that every policy, every practice in all spheres of public life be premised on the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism. And I think we all know how this definition has been used. It says to criticize Israel is to hate Jews. This completely ignores the ever more prominent voices of anti-Zionist Jews who say to be Jewish is not to be Zionist. To be Jewish is not to swear an unswerving allegiance to a colonial, settler, apartheid, militaristic ethno-state that commits mass murder in brazen and unapologetic fashion. That is happy to perpetuate the completely discredited lie, as Siegel has done, of 40 beheaded babies in the face of the murder, deliberate and targeted murder and injury of in excess of 50,000 children in Gaza. Was the lesson of the Nazi Holocaust not never again? And that meant never again for anyone. So as Australia and other Western governments dig in to support their most precious militarized colonial outpost in the Middle East, we say, we will bring you down. We will not allow this moment in history, this fight for humanity, to be used to silence dissent and to dismantle our rights. The Siegel Plan attacks us all, educators, students, journalists, protesters, immigrants, and so it must unite us all. At this moment in history, we must stand together to fight this with everything we've got. We call on the government to sack Special Envoy Gillian Siegel. And implement sanctions on Israel. You come for one, you face us all, has been the catch cry of the protests in the United States, and today echoes through the UK in the wake of the banning of Palestine Action. The road to peace and justice in the world today runs through Gaza, and we will travel that road alongside our Palestinian brothers and sisters for as long as it takes. Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! From the river to the sea! From the river to the sea! Thank you.
That was Jeanette Parker from Jews for Palestine WA, who spoke at the Sanction Israel Now rally in Canberra over the weekend. And make sure you stay tuned to 3CR because we'll be speaking to Mercedes Zanka from Renegade Activists, who will be calling in from Canberra later this morning at 7:45. We're going to play a song for you now. This is by Nemesis, who is a Palestinian-Canadian singer-songwriter. This is her song from 2024. It's one of our favourites. It's called Stick of Gum.
I swear if I showed you a song I made, you'd say it's not your taste.
Oh, 3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was just a little announcement encouraging people to apply to volunteer at 3CR, as you heard Juliet and myself speak about this morning. It's a great place to talk about things that you're really passionate about, meet other incredible programmers who are doing their own thing and putting out stories into the world. So if you're interested, you can go onto the website at 3cr.org.au. And just before that, we heard, we were listening to the song Stick of Gum by Nemesis. Auntie Sue Hasseldine is a Gugudha elder who is protecting her country from militarization and continuing colonization. In this recorded interview, Auntie Sue outlines the threats from companies such as Southern Launch and Thales, who have set up a rocket launching test site north of Ceduna on Gugudha country. She also speaks about the importance of protecting the rock holes, country and animals for future generations.
My name's Sue Hasseldine. I come from Ceduna on the far west coast of South Australia. I'm a Gugudha elder, and my journey in life is to protect country, sacred sites, animals, culture, and people. On our country, we have a lot of sacred sites and Seven Sisters Dreaming and probably a lot of minerals and stuff as well. But right at this stage, our biggest problem is a company called Southern Launch that want to drop their payloads, and they want to test weapons, you know, guided missiles and stuff on our country. And what better places to, you know, aim those missiles than on our sacred sites? They keep saying that the country is uninhabited, but that's not true. We're always out on country, plus the animals live there. We've got some beautiful animals, and, you know, as we all know, those poor buggers can't speak for themselves. So somebody has to stand up for them and give them a voice in this horrible, money-hungry, greedy world, a world that doesn't care what they destroy or who. So, yeah, my fight with Southern Launch at this stage is not just with them. It's with ADF and Thales, that French weapons company, VADA from the United States, and, yeah, High Impulse from Germany. So, yeah, We've got some big players, the space agency. We've got some big players against us, but that's okay. We're stubborn and we're strong, and we know we're in the right with, you know, protecting country and culture and animals. So I reckon we'll win. I don't know how, because it's a proper David and Goliath fight. But then Goliath won that fight anyway. So we just keep going. We can't afford to stop. We have to keep fighting to look after everything we hold dear. Because, see, if we lose that country to rocket launching and whatever not, we also lose our identity, and our souls will be destroyed. Because on that country is our church, our spirituality is out there. Our pharmacy, our bush meds are out there. Our butcher's shop, our grocery shop, our school, where we teach our kids survival, respect, caring and sharing. That's all done on country. That's not done in a classroom. So it's really important that we keep this country for the future generations, because I might say my country, but it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the next generation. And we're just the keepers of that. And I've got the next generations coming up to look after their country for the next generation. So, yeah, and it'll just keep going as long as we possibly can, so that everybody can have a free life, free from the fear of war. And, you know, and the things they test on our country, they'll go and kill other innocent people with. You know, go take it overseas and then destroy. You take Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Some of that uranium that damaged those places and those people came from our country. And we didn't give permission for them to do that, to take that and destroy other people like they did. They just came and take, and now they're doing the same thing again. They're just coming and taking and telling me to get off country, and it's not their country to tell me to do that. So, yeah, we look after the water holes out there. We've got a lot of wonderful people come out and help to do all this work, cleaning dead animals out of the water holes and leaving them clean again for fresh water. And, you know, people don't want to do dirty work like that. There's always the kitchen. There's a lot of work for everybody to do when we go out on our rock hole cleaning trips. And they can be hard, they can be easy, and they can be fun. Because we're always laughing at somebody who turns out to be quite dirty, but they seem like they enjoy doing what they do. But it's great to go out and teach other people our culture too, because if they don't understand what we're fighting for, they can't help us. Like, I'm a great believer in the fact that if you want to throw your weight behind us, come on the country and see what we do, see what we're fighting for. So that's what a lot of our people have done. And they keep coming back time after time because they fall in love with the country. They fall in love with the work we do and they know why we do it, which is a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for that, Auntie Sue. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, you've talked about the threats of companies, not just Southern Launch, but a whole web and network of huge, huge companies located here on this continent, but also from overseas, you know, and like you said, it's a massive fight. You're fighting the military industrial complex. And something you said before about, you know, they claim that the land is uninhabited. It's just a continuation of Terra Nullius and that colonial mindset. So, yeah, I was wondering if you could reflect on that in terms of the way in which these corporations view country and the land and how that is so in such stark contrast to the First Nations perspective, law, and your connection to country.
Well, the big corporations look at it as just like a big playground for them, I guess, something that they can destroy at will. They don't look at what it means to us. And it's not all First Nations people, because they do have First Nations people on their side that have signed off, ILUAs or whatever they want to call them. I call them illegal land use agreements. But, yeah, they get people like that to sign off and then they look down their necks noses at the rest of us who are standing back and saying, no, we did not give you permission to go destroy that country. You don't know that country. You don't know the stories. You know, you've never grown up on that country. It's not yours. But because they've got Aboriginal people that have said, yes, okay, you know, you'll be okay, you can do this, you can do that, they go right ahead and do all that. But they've got backing from Native Title, for instance. They've turned Aboriginal people against Aboriginal people again. So, you know, divide and conquer is alive and well as far as Aboriginal people are concerned. And why? You know, it's destruction of country for monetary gain, for power. And that what they're using is against innocent people, people that haven't got the resources to fight them back, you know. I don't know, but it's our country, it belongs to the future generations, and we will stand up and fight for that. I've got four generations that go out on country. So I'm very lucky in that respect. And they all love country and they all want to protect it. One of them said to me, Nana, if they take our country away, where will we go? Well, so I just said, well, we can't allow it to happen. We must keep fighting.
Yeah, and we're seeing that all over the continent across so many different sacred sites.
Yes.
You've got First Nations people of all generations coming out to protect country. And, you know, you were describing before the trips that you go out to clean the rock coal sites. I was wondering if you could describe that a bit more in terms of what that looks like and how the movement has grown.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I started taking other young ones that besides my family out, oh, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, something like that, onto country to help look after the sites. And, you know, there was a lot of weeding, and there still is a lot of weeding to do, actually. And we would be, that movement has grown. And as some of us are getting older, younger ones are stepping up. I don't know, people call them greenies. I call them my family. They're stepping up and taking the place of some of the others who have gotten kids and mortgages and every other thing that's, you know, pinning people down there. But when we go out on country, we can go for 7 days or so, and we pull out things like dead kangaroos, emus, dingoes and camels, stuff like that, that fall into the water holes, can't get out again and just die. We clean all that right out and leave the holes clean again for the next rain, which hasn't been for a while. And we just keep battling with it. It's always good fun on those trips as well. Everybody enjoys each other's company and sit around the campfire yarning at the end of the day and things like that. And people learn. People that had no idea where we're coming from learn where we're coming from, and they support that. So yeah, it's been really, really great, and it's grown over the years to, you could almost say, from one generation of greenies to the next. Like, well, the younger ones are coming on, which gives me more incentive, more, oh, not power, but more energy, that's the word, gives me more energy to see so many dedicated people come on board time after time. And as for space agencies, they're liars. They told me that my safety was paramount, but they let the German high impulse rocket off over my head, along with some people that was with me, some really great people that were with me. That rocket went over the top of us, and their payload dropped not far from us. So where was the Australian Space Agency then? They were at the launch pad. So, you know, so much for safety of the people on country. It's just like another Maralinga. They knew people were on country, but they didn't care. They dropped those bombs anyway.
Those actions really do show where their priorities are. And mm-hmm. It's not with people or protection of the land or the animals.
They just don't care, so long as they can get what they want. And the destruction of people, animals, country is nothing. But to us, it's everything.
We're seeing a lot of organising happening around, well, demilitarisation, trying to get weapons companies out of our communities. So do you have any words or reflections for people here in Nam who are organising and fighting their own fight?
Don't give up. And I wish the heck that we could all get together, maybe even march on Canberra or something, but, you know, the First Nations mob and all the people that help us, Australia-wide, get together and make our voices heard. Australia-wide voices, you know, from everywhere. They're copying it in Western Australia, Northern Territory, you know, South Australia, Victoria, you name it. And if we could all somehow manage to get together, march on the politicians, because they're the ones making all the decisions on our behalf, and just let them know that we're not going to stop. Because I've said it before, if I break their law, it means I'm upholding mine. My law is the law of the land, and it's stronger than the Westminster system. So I will be fighting within my law. And I hope that the others all do the same thing. Just don't give up.
Before we leave today, Auntie Sue, just wondering if you had anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners about your work and the ongoing fight to protect country. Any final words that you want to share with us?
Well, like I said, we're not giving up. we're going to keep fighting. And one of my friends said to me, the battle is not lost until you stop fighting. And I suppose you could play the favourite song, that Barnyard one, I Won't Back Down, to all those people out there we were fighting. Dedicate that song to them.
That was Auntie Sue Hasseldine, Gugatha Elder, speaking about the trips that she leads to help look after sacred sites on country. To support Auntie Sue's work, you can follow at West Mallee Protection on Instagram. You can also donate to the West Mallee Protection Fund. For a more comprehensive conversation about the threats to Gugatha country and the importance of Auntie Sue Hasseldine's work, you can head back to the Radioactive Show's episode Protecting Gugatha Country, The Next Generation at 3cr.org/radioactive.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
What would make you want to visit one of our libraries? That's the question Maribyrnong City Council is asking as part of a conversation to improve our libraries for the future. Learn more and share your thoughts by 27th of July at www.yourcityyourvoice.com.au/your-library. Maribyrnong City Council is a 3CR supporter.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, we're about
feminisms in their multitudes,
First Nations sovereignty,
land back,
trans liberation, poo-poo on the turfs,
abolition,
anti-racism,
sex worker rights,
South liberation,
disability justice,
anti-imperialism,
decolonisation,
an end to borders,
workers' justice,
and so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
We have a right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we're going to chat to Mercedes Zanka, who is a member of Renegades Activist and also the co-host of 3CR program Friday Rave. Mercedes is calling us today from the lawns of Parliament House on Ngunnawal and Ngambri country, where she's participating in Converge on Canberra. Mercedes is here to chat to us about how the convergence is going and the complicity of Australia in supplying weapons to Israel. Thank you for joining us on 3CR Tuesday Breakfast this morning, Mercedes.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, can you tell us, start off by telling us a little bit about who Renegade Activists are?
So Renegade Activists is an anti-military group, organising group. We've been organising against the military-industrial complex for the last, since the mid-80s. Not myself, but Jacob and other crew who are part of Renegade Activists. As we also provide the sound for rallies and stuff, and we're actually just out front of Parliament now, setting up the staging for the Convergence on Canberra rally today.
Yeah, wow. No, it's all happening. I remember that there's about 150 organisations who are involved in the convergence today. Can you tell us a little bit about the atmosphere on the ground and, you know, what's happening in the lead-up?
Yeah, it's been a really good couple of days so far. So it's a three-day convergence. It started on Sunday with a rally at the front of Parliament House calling on the Australian government to sanction Israel now. The Australian government, as listeners will very well know, have just done absolutely nothing while we're watching a live stream genocide and a starvation of millions of people in Gaza. And so it's a movement for liberation. The rally started on Sunday. It was great. There was really big numbers, really high energy. We went and marched from Parliament to the past the US Embassy and to the Israeli Embassy and then came back to Parliament. There was an illuminated vigil on the lawns on Sunday evening. Yesterday was a really great day of actions. There was a couple of self-organised actions that happened, one at Northrop Grumman. There was a couple of people on the roof there and also people on the roofs at EOS, Northrop Grumman being the second largest defence prime in the world, and EOS is the they manufacture the the R-400 that has been used and exported to Israel during the genocide. So there were two actions there. There was also a day of workshops, so a stacked program of workshops that were really fantastic, from everything of how to set up an action desk, about direct action, about the BDS, about the Astra Aero Lab complex in Newcastle. There was a really, and Dave Rovics was there doing a music workshop in the morning. Amin did a beautiful dub care workshop. So that was fantastic and heaps of people. It was really well attended. And then afterwards, there was a group who went and did a BDS tour around around Canberra with Dave Rovics and a bunch of people going to the BDS sites and singing songs. And, yeah, it was really beautiful. So it's been a really great couple of days in the lead up and everyone is just getting ready. There's more people rolling into Ngambri Ngunnawal country today for the rally.
Yeah, wow. No, it sounds like a really jam-packed schedule and, really interesting to hear about some of that direct action against some of the weapons companies that you said was taking place over the last couple of days. Can you talk us through a little bit more about, how Australia is providing weapons to Israel and, you know, kind of what that export actually looks like and how, there's a lot of opacity kind of a lack of information to the public.
Yeah. It's the kind of the same old line that Albanese says, we do not export arms to Israel. And the opaque nature of the Australia's defence export control framework is that we have legislation, and a lot of this legislation has been passed as a part of AUKUS Pillar 2, which has created a legislative framework in which there is a licence-free trading environment is what they call it, so between the US and the UK and Australia. So basically, in order to export parts and components to the US and the UK, we don't, Australia doesn't, or suppliers don't need to get a export permit. There's also re-export, which is part of the US-Australian Defence Trade Treaty. The proper name of it evades me right now. But it also allows the US to re-export without getting approval or having to sign off from the Australian government to re-export any components or weapons. So I guess that's one small part, is that there's a license-free environment in which Australia can export parts to the US. This is what's happened with EOS and the R400. They can be assembled in the US and then re-exported anywhere. And we know that those parts are going to the US. And just this, it was just, I think, this last week, Declassified Australia have released some flight information about F-35 components being directly exported from Williamtown, which is just near Newcastle, directly to Israel. So not only is, you know, the Australian government's a cold-faced lie, that the Australian government is saying that they don't export arms and or components. And so under the Arms Trade Treaty, it's not just fully assembled weapons, it also is components. But interestingly enough, that's a self-reporting process. But Australia doesn't actually report weapons components in that. It only reports its like fully assembled arms, for example. But yeah, I definitely recommend readers to jump and have a look at the Declassified Australia. And also, I mean, Israel is also, it's exporting the tools of genocide, and Australia also buys that, as many people will know. We've got the Elbit Systems, which sells their weapons, is battle-tested on Palestinians, has a partnership with the Australian government for the Human Machine Teaming Centre of Excellence, which is located in Port Melbourne. And as part of the Redback Infantry Fighting Vehicles with Hanwha Defence, at the Armoured Vehicle Centre of Excellence, Elbit Systems has the $900 million contract to make the turret systems. Now, initially, the Australian government said that that contract, the Australian government didn't have anything to do with that contract. It was subcontracted by Hanwha. And just this week, Freedom of Information reports have showed that the Commonwealth did, in fact, as we knew, but we now have the body of evidence to say that the Commonwealth did have to sign off on those contracts, did have to get approval, did have to approve the lines that were going to go into the media release in relation to that. So the government is lying, and it's continuing to trade in the tools of genocide. It's continuing to export arms. It's continuing to have no action whatsoever in the face of a genocide.
Yeah.
Just this week, over 100 of Palestinians have been murdered receiving aid. There's been a fresh offensive, a new offensive in central Gaza. And the Australian government has the power to put sanctions, and not performative sanctions, like, you know, targeted sanctions for expansion of settlements of right-wing Israeli government. I mean, you know. But so it's not performative. They have the power to actually do something to stop the genocide, and they're failing in their obligations under international law. The Hague Group is meeting now, and Australia is not part of that.
No, I think, you know, we need to remember all of that, and we really appreciate you going through and explaining a lot of the lack of transparency when it comes to export and import as well, related to weapons. I think, so many people, you know, wouldn't know that. It's not very obvious unless you look, you know, deeper beyond the surface. I think, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today, Mercedes, but really appreciate you coming on, taking time out of, your busy few days up in Canberra to chat to us and, you know, give us this rundown.
No No, thanks for having us on the show, and I just want to give a big up to everyone who's supported from back home in Nam, and also to everyone who has come out to Canberra. It's just been amazing. There's incredible people here. The energy is good, and we've got the power to force our government to not be complicit in a genocide. They're doing this in our names, and they need to sanction Israel now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and we're going to be nice and loud today.
Exactly. Well, it sounds like you're certainly, making a lot of noise up there. So thanks so much, Mercedes.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
No worries. We've been chatting to Mercedes Zanka of Renegade Activists, who has called us on the ground from Converge on Canberra. And you can follow at renegade.activists and visit renegadeactivists.org for more information and updates on their work.
As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in Nam.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest President Donald Dump, leading the positive team. Take it away, Don. It's going to be a big debate. A great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
Menaha Kandasamy is a union activist from Sri Lanka and member of Ceylon Workers Red Flag Union. Menaha is part of an international campaign to pressure the Sri Lankan government, tea companies and retailers to provide better working and life conditions for tea plantation workers. And Menaha has been here in Nam to discuss labour and human rights issues in Sri Lanka, and held an event on Saturday last weekend at Balam Balam Place. And Menaha joins us on the show today to chat about these key issues facing plantation workers in Sri Lanka. But welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Menaha.
Hi. Thank you to having me here.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for joining us, Menaha. For our listeners, you've come here from Sri Lanka to chat about issues facing the plantation workers. Can you give us a little bit of history to what tea plantations have looked like in Sri Lanka and what some of the issues have been?
Yeah. More than 200 years ago, it's a colonized British colonial period, thousands and thousands of workers were brought to Sri Lanka. So that time it called as Ceylon. They were brought to clean the jungles and plant coffee. So then later it became tea and rubber. So these workers are backbone of Sri Lankan economy. So what is the major problem for these workers currently? What is going on is extreme poverty, country situation also extreme poverty, and their living condition is, it's very patriarchal system in place, and they are isolated. They live inside the estate, work inside the estate, so everything inside, they don't have much connection with outside the world, outside even other Sri Lankan communities. So in this context, currently they are facing lot of problems. One is the cost of living is very high. Their wages very little. I will say it's for a day, $6 and 75 cents for a worker. And this worker also, they have like a big families, and their living condition extremely bad. So it's overcrowded and 10 into 10 feet. So they have to sleep, cook, eat, study, everything in that situation. And when it comes to the working place, the working condition is really terrible. Even today, it's 2025, the workers don't have toilets at workplace. They work more than 8 hours. And also, I have to say, it's a feminized sector. It's more women workers are working. So the women workers' problem are really high. So what I can just say, it's a pregnant women and feeding mothers are there. There are benefits. And also, there is, when you say no toilets, young women, even men workers, can't, you know, it's workers' dignity. It's not something whether can we have or not. We can't make it as choice that toilets and health and safety is nil, as I said. So what I want to say is currently they are going through a big, big risk. So that is, the companies are trying to casualize the plantation sector. Mm. Yeah, the plantation sector, actually, it's the formal sector. That means it's a check roll system. They were covered by EPF, ETF, maternity benefit, and workplace injury, the compensation, paid leave, job security, trade union rights, etc., etc. But when I say it's casualization, the workers are trying to give a small plot land to workers, ask them to, they are saying it's free, you don't need to be under anyone. Anytime you can pluck, any amount you can pluck, and you can bring your friends or family members, doesn't matter. How much you pluck, we pay for it. So that is the well-planned extreme exploitation. Because once when workers agree to this, they are going to lose all what I said, the Employment Provident Fund, Employees Trust Fund, the women workers are going to lose their maternity benefits. Not only that, feeding mothers are going to lose their, you know, feeding time, feeding break for their children, and pregnant mothers are going to lose, you know. Now, before it was like they were given in the flatland to pluck tea, and now it's like, no. No matter.
Yeah.
Plus, you got it, you have to do.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a very difficult situation, you know, particularly for the women working in the plantations. Can you tell us a little bit more, Menaha, about who the people are who are working in the plantations? Obviously, there's women working there and men. And are there also children working on the plantations?
Actually, in Sri Lanka, child labour is prohibited. They can't work. There's no children working in the plantation sector. But this situation will bring children, already started, because when you casualize, when you're asking workers, you know, how much tea you're going to pluck, you're going to earn that much, then definitely, you know, extreme poverty situation, the workers will think, oh, okay, you know, we have to pluck more tea. There's no option. They will bring children to into this field, right? So it is they are trapped into do this situation. So in future, if they are going to specialize more, now it started, if they are going to continue, definitely, even though we have a law, government can't stop the child labor, right? So this is, there are so many evidence now itself. Yeah, children are trapped into this situation. And also I want to just say, when you say this specialization, these women workers will get the plot of land, but once if they are pregnant, then if they can't work in that field more than 3 days or 4 days, and the land taken away from them and given to someone else, or they have to make sure someone plucking in that tree. So they are going to give a birth, to this country to see the new citizen going to arrive. Because of that, they're going to lose their job.
Yeah.
So the job security is going to be a big threat for them.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it's, you know, becoming more and more precarious. And, yeah, as part of the Ceylon Workers Red Flag Union, what are the demands that you would like to see for the improvements to the workers' conditions?
Yeah. Actually, we want to say for all the comrades, workers, allies, whoever, we say no more silence, no more fear. No more lies, right? We are not just laborers, right? We are not just number of, payrolls. We are builders of this nation, and we demand for future worth living, right? So we are saying stop this specialization, and whoever, internationally, people can support this class struggle. This is a fight against corporate greed and caste oppression and state ignorance. And we are not asking for charity. We are demanding justice. So join the fight, end the exploitation, defend the dignity of plantation workers. This is what we want.
Yeah, I think, those are, such important things, and, we need that across all industries. And, certainly I think, getting that message out there and helping people to understand, is so important, especially because Sri Lanka is the second biggest source of tea imports to Australia. So, we're connected here in Australia to this fight and this struggle. And yet, in terms of how our listeners can show solidarity with Sri Lankan tea plantation workers, what steps can our listeners take?
Solidarity, actually, internationally, solidarity is very important because everybody drinks tea. So when they have their cup of tea, they can remember what is going on behind the scenes. So I think the pressure needs to be done from everywhere to the companies and whoever, connected with this production to pressurize to give, a decent workplace environment and give a decent wage, right? And have a better life and the dignity for workers.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we really appreciate you sharing all of that, Menahar. And I think, it's so important to be considering this, as you're saying, as we're drinking tea and, thinking about that international solidarity and, standing up for it is so important. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me this space to raise plantation workers'
lives.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, no, we really appreciate you making time for us and, sharing, all about your work.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Menahar Kandasamy, a Sri Lankan union activist and member of Ceylon Workers Red Flag Union, about the campaign to improve workers' rights in tea plantations in Sri Lanka, with a particular focus on how this has affected women workers.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Bisexual Alliance Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label or no label at all, their partners and allies. Bisexual Alliance runs discussion groups in person and online. The group offers a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. Bisexual Alliance is especially keen to hear from multigender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations of $2 or more to Bisexual Alliance are now tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at bi-alliance.org, email info@bi-alliance.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
A 3CR supporter. I'm bisexual.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and up next is Kate Wiley, the Executive Director of Doctors for the Environment Australia and also a working GP. Kate was previously the chair of the RACGP in the Climate and Environmental Medicine Specific Interest Group. Kate is here today to chat to us about last week's federal court hearing of Doctors for the Environment Australia versus NOPSEMA and Woodside. Welcome to 3CR, Kate.
Oh, good morning, Juliet. How are you?
Yeah, doing well, thank you. Well, thanks so much for getting up early. I know you're calling in from Adelaide. We appreciate you making time for us. But can you tell us a little bit about who Doctors for the Environment are?
Yeah, sure. So Doctors for the Environment are medical professionals who volunteer their time for climate action. We fundamentally know that you need a healthy planet to have healthy people, and we accept our responsibility as healthcare practitioners to advocate for reduction of emissions, so getting us off coal, oil and gas, for protecting nature and for making sure we practice healthcare sustainably.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's such an important perspective to be, advocating for, and one that, we don't always hear in mainstream media as well. And I know that last week you had the federal court hearing of Doctors for the Environment Australia versus NOPSEMA, which is the offshore energy regulator. Is that right?
Yep. And yeah, NOPSEMA's the regulator.
Yep, and Woodside. But can you tell us a little bit of background in relation to this case and, why Doctors for the Environment Australia is pursuing it?
Yeah, sure. And obviously it was a pretty big day for us in court last week. We DEA, we are a small organisation, and so us pursuing a judicial review with the government regulator and Woodside was a really big step for us. But what we were basically saying is that the government regulator, which is NOPSEMA, should not have approved the environmental plan for Woodside Scarborough Gas Project. And basically we think that their reason for approvals just kind of wasn't good enough, that Woodside's environmental plan was pretty vague, didn't kind of reach their internal reasons for approval, and yet NOPSEMA approved it anyway. So, we thought we should point this out. Do we have this ethical responsibility? We need to protect the health of our planet, and we had the opportunity to pursue this judicial review, so we went ahead and took it.
Yeah. Well, no, I think, it's so important to be holding them to account. And, there are so many, consequences to, the approval of the Scarborough Gas Project. So important to bring that to light. And can you talk us through, a little bit more about the angle/argument that you're putting forward in this case?
Yeah, sure. So in the environmental plan approval process, any project has to have emissions at an acceptable level, that's their words, and they have to be as low as reasonably practicable. So these are all, very bureaucratic terms. But what we saw in the plan was there is no definition in there of what is acceptable. So how can you approve that a plan is at an acceptable level, when nowhere does anybody say what an acceptable level is. So we pointed that out in the court. Also, one of the ways that Woodside said that they were going to reach emissions being as low as reasonably practicable, which they shortened to ALARP. So lots of acronyms in this case, really. It doesn't make it easier for us.
No, yeah, really, you know, it isn't easy for, you know, an average person to tune in.
Exactly. It's so dense, right? Like, there's all this, you know, fine legalese language, which I suppose is what you get with court things, right? But the whole point about making things as low as reasonably practicable, one of the things Woodside said that they would do to reach that level is they're saying that when they export gas, that displaces more carbon-intensive forms of energy. And, you know, we contend that you can't prove that, that that's just... Yeah, that they need to kind of try a bit harder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I think, you know, really important to sort of scrutinise, you know, that whole idea as well, you know, particularly when it's things that we can't easily measure. But, yeah, now that the hearing has concluded last week, what's next in the case and, yeah, what are you guys doing moving forward?
Well, now we're waiting for the judge. So Justice McElwain will make his decision, and that's, of course, his responsibility and right to do so. So we will sit patiently and wait to see what he says. You know, of course, we hope that we're successful, because if that happens, that will mean that they don't have a valid environmental plan for the Scarborough Offshore Gas Project, and that will mean that, you know, Woodside will have to resubmit and do that work again. And, you know, DEA continues to do all the other work that we do. We're gearing up for our Health and Climate Forum at Parliament House in the first week of September this year in Canberra, so we're busily planning that.
Yeah. Well, no, that all sounds, you know, really fascinating. And, yeah, what are some of the, like, key topics that you want to cover in the Health and Climate Forum?
Oh, thank you. I'd love to talk about this, Juliet.
Yeah.
So, fundamentally, what we want people to realise is that our health is massively affected by the health of our planet and by climate change. And so we can't put health as a separate. Health is very much a part of who and what we are. You know, if you're unhealthy, if you can't live and do your life, then that's a bad thing. So at the forum, we're looking at health, how health impacts with energy policy, how health impacts with environmental policy, and how well our health system is prepared for climate change.
Yeah, and I can imagine that there's a lot more preparation needed to, you know, get our health system actually ready for a lot of the impacts of climate change as well.
Yeah, yeah, there's heaps. And, like, you know, when we think about energy policy, though, like, we know that gas, obviously, in the home increases our risk of asthma, but we need our, you know, and Victoria's done some recent regulation to support, you know, to protect people's health around that. We know that when we burn coal, oil and gas, you know, we're causing climate change, and climate change has huge impacts on our health that we don't think about. But, like, you know, the impacts of heat waves, it changes in infectious disease, the impacts on our mental health, our loss of infrastructure when there's a flood or storm, and therefore our ability to provide healthcare. And so it needs, our response to climate needs to integrate health. And our response to things like energy policy, environmental policy, needs to integrate the human and planetary health impacts to do the right thing by us and our planet.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think, yeah, it sounds like there's so much more that we need to be doing and, you know, so much interesting stuff as well that our listeners can find out about through your work. And on that, yeah, where can 3CR listeners go to find out more about what Doctors for the Environment Australia is up to?
Sure, we'll go to our website. Just Google Doctors for the Environment Australia, or it's www.dea.org.au. And we're on all socials. You know, please follow us on Insta, follow us on TikTok, LinkedIn, all of the usual places. And we're updating them regularly, and hang out with us.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on air and chatting us through some of the specifics of this case. And, yeah, we appreciate your time today, Kate.
I appreciate you having me on, Juliet. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Well, we've been speaking to Dr. Kate Wiley of Doctors for the Environment Australia about the organisation's current court case against NOPSEMA. NOPSEMA and Woodside. And you can go to dea.org.au and at Doctors for the Environment for more information. And now on to the events that are happening this week. So tonight at 7 p.m, there's a film screening organised by the Latin American Solidarity Network at Catalyst Social Centre in Coburg. And the film is a documentary called Landless from 2019. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, 23rd of July at 6 p.m, there's a Palestine Trivia Night fundraising event for AFIDA, which is the Union Aid Abroad organisation, at the Unitarian Church, which is at 110 Grey Street in East Melbourne. And then also tomorrow night at 7 p.m, there's the Stand Up for Palestine comedy fundraiser. So that's taking place at Grace Darling Hotel in Collingwood. And then on Friday, the 25th of July at 6:45 p.m, we've got Port Phillip for Palestine. They're doing a film screening, Palestine Under Siege, which is happening at 66 Fitzroy Street in St Kilda. And then finally on Saturday, 26th of July, from 12 midday to 8 p.m, there's going to be a mutual aid market for Palestine at Flippies, which is 646 Sydney Road in Brunswick. And yeah, we've certainly had a jam-packed show today. So we started off at 7:15. We listened to a speech from the Rally to Sanction Israel Now that took place in Canberra on Ngunnawal country on Sunday. And we heard from Janet Parker from Jews for Palestine WA, who spoke about the ongoing dehumanisation of Palestinians and the responsibility of Western governments in the facilitation of genocide and also silencing of dissent in recent times. And then at 7:30, we listened to a pre-record with Auntie Sue Coleman Hasseldine, who's a Gugatha elder working to protect her country from militarisation and continuing colonisation. And she spoke about the threats from companies such as Southern Launch and Thales, who've set up rocket launching test sites north of Ceduna on Gugatha country in South Australia. Then at 7:45, we spoke to Mercedes Zanker from the Renegade Activists and also co-host of 3CR program Friday Rave. And Mercedes called us from on the ground of Parliament House on Ngunnawal and Ngambri country to chat to us about how the convergence is going and to talk through the complicity of Australia in supplying weapons to Israel. And then at 8 o'clock, we spoke to Menahar Kandasamy, who's a union activist from Sri Lanka and member of the Ceylon Workers Red Flag Union. And Menahar spoke to us about the international campaign to improve working and life conditions for tea plantation workers, and specifically spoke to the impact on women workers who make up a big portion of that workforce. And then finally, we spoke to Dr. Kate Wiley from Doctors for the Environment Australia. Kate is the executive director of the organisation and spoke to us about last week's federal court hearing of Doctors for the Environment Australia versus NOPSEMA, which is the offshore energy regulator, and Woodside, and also the broader work of Doctors for the Environment Australia. But yeah, that's what we've had on for such a jam-packed show today. We hope that everybody has a wonderful rest of their Tuesday, and please stay tuned to listen to Accent of Women, which is coming up next. And yeah, we also hope that you can tune in next week to Tuesday Breakfast.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.